Hello, my fabulous radio listeners, and welcome to yet another episode of Sex Talk. I'm your host, DJ Flu-Like Symptoms. And tonight we have a very special guest. We have artist, professor, provocateur, and sexplorer, Susie of the Carnegie Mellon campus. And Susie is with us to discuss, I believe, National Psychics Week. I believe last night on the radio, President Clinton announced that it was National Psychics Week. And you are Carnegie Mellon's premier psychic explorer. Is that not right?
I think you have that wrong. Make that sexual explosion.
my cue cards. I'm going to have to let go of the cue card guy. With me, as usual, is my co-host, DJ Lance, provocative and psychically enhanced, as always.
I try. God knows I try.
So Susie, you're a relatively young faculty member here on the CMU campus, and you have yet to become bitter and angry in your fight for tenure. Is that correct?
This is true. This is my first semester.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. So you still have that flush of creativity and enthusiasm.
The rosy glow of youth, as Orwell put it.
that has yet to be beaten out of you.
That CMU virgin glow.
So welcome to the program and welcome to Carnegie Mellon University.
Thanks.
Well, why don't we get right into and talk about sex? So you're an artist, and a lot of your work deals with sex, right?
That's right. It deals with desire and sexuality, and to some degree, overt sex, but not always.
So, I mean, not always overt sex means you stay away from the line that might be confused with pornography.
Right. I don't think it's always pornography. And if it does fall under that, it's usually done in a really humorous way.
So could you tell us a little bit about what you actually do, what your work actually consists of?
The tape that's probably best known that I made is a 4.5-minute spoof on music video. It's called A Spy, Hester Reeve Does the Doors, and in it a young woman performs as a Jesus Christ lip-syncing to a Doors song called A Spy, and the lyrics go, I'm a spy in the house of love, and it's about omniscience, the song is, and she has a fake beard on, a loincloth, and cherubs painted on her breasts, which are exposed, and in the background is sort of faux psychedelic imagery and appropriated images from mostly 60s exploitation films. In a weird sort of psychedelic collage.
When you say 60s exploitation film, what exactly do you mean?
These sort of 60s films that were made about, about high school and sex and drugs, and I don't even know the names of the movies. There was another one about if it's really bad for housewives to be alone out in the suburbs because they'll start doing it with each other. So that's what that film was about.
So was that a serious film?
No.
Warning Syndrome, or was it a...
I think it was one of these films that was, was sold to people under the guise of, this is educational, but it was really promoted as titillation.
Ah, okay. Yeah, anyone who's watched late-night TV, not now, but perhaps 10 or 15 years ago, is familiar with those sorts of movies, right?
Yeah, and you can get them on video. you can probably get them here at that place called Incredibly Strange Video that's, I think, in Dormont.
Yeah, down in the south somewhere.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the Jesus Christ statement. So you were trying to put this woman in the persona of Jesus Christ? Is that what?
Actually, this was a video I made of a performance that she had originated. She had done this performance live at a show I had curated in a nightclub in Chicago with my then-girlfriend that was called Bait and Switch at Night, Every Girl is a Boy. Pardon me. And it was an evening of all women doing drag performance. So there are 13 different women who did short drag performances. And then after they did that, we did a lesbians and literature fashion show.
Wow. Now, there's such a wealth of material to go into here, right? I mean, we've talked about drag queens a lot on the show, but what's the...
Drag kings.
Drag king. What is that like? What's the culture of that like?
Well, it's really changed. When I was doing this in Chicago in the late 80s and early 90s, it was really playful. People didn't always dress in such a way that they wanted to pass. It was about art and play. And it wasn't so much emulating the drag queen culture, but now there's a huge drag king movement in some of the major urban areas like London, New York, San Francisco. And actually, Judith Halberstam and Del Grace have just come out with a coffee table book called Drag Kings. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
But, the idea is in the same way drag queens exaggerate the femininity of the roles they're stepping into. Is there a similar...
I think so. Like, one of the most famous drag kings, their name, this person's name is Moby Dick. Like, M-O-B period Dick. And... is a pretty interesting character.
So do they try to slide into male archetypes like the
Cursor? Yeah. Like Moby Dick is sort of the like working class English bloke kind of worker thing.
Now, DJ Flu-Like Symptoms, since you're the gay host, perhaps you could tell us what role sexually drag queens play in gay. I realize it's not exclusively a gay phenomenon, but...
Well, the problem is that due to my flu-like symptoms, I'm having a hard time conceptualizing this. I have actually never quite understood the whole gay male drag thing, except that they seem to be the sort of wittiest and cleverest of the gay community. Like they're really funny, and there's a sort of hyper exaggerated sense of style, and there's this like this exaggeration of femininity.
But, and as a reward, they get anointed with pretty wigs and fake nails.
I think so. I think there's some kind of kickback from Revlon, but I don't know. Like I don't know how this started. And actually, since you're a tenured professor, and
I'm not tenured.
Oh well, I'm just extrapolating.
Since you're soon to be, I mean, it is National Psychics Week, and it's from the emanations within this room. It's clear that you will soon be a tenured professor.
I think it takes a long time here.
Interesting. But I actually don't know what's up with that. I mean, I actually don't know what motivates someone to adopt this kind of persona, except that except to get a lot of attention and get a chance to perform.
Well, let me ask you a quick question then. When you look at a drag queen performing, do you find that attractive or do you find that too feminine for your taste?
Yeah, well, it doesn't really do a lot for me personally. I mean, I find them funny, like amusing to be around, but it's never somebody that I want to take behind the barn and have sex with. That's usually reserved for tragically pouty 19-year-old swimmers and so on.
he's not kidding.
I have to say that, as much as I find the drag king phenomenon sort of fascinating and interesting to see women sort of exaggerate the tropes of masculinity, I never find myself attracted physically to a drag king because I don't really find... I mean, I can find men attractive, but they never or seldom turn me on. So a drag king isn't really going to do much for me in terms of making me feel attracted to them.
Well, I mean, so since you're a lesbian, let's ask you this question then. There's sort of a folk image that lesbians often get split into classes of femmes and butch lesbians, right? Now, clearly that's not going to be true, but is there...
It's
not
true in some cases. True. Some people really are into that, mm-hmm. and make that an important part of their lives and work. It hasn't been that big of a deal to me personally in most ways.
I'd like to interrupt for just a moment. If you, the listener, want to... ask Susie, the psychic professor, to predict the future. The phone numbers of the studio are 412-621-9728. Please call in and share your thoughts and questions with us. I was actually at an S&M party not too long ago, and there was someone who I thought was a man until they got into this kind of three-way chain where it was actually very interesting. One woman was... the man, the so-called man, was sitting on the couch, and then the middle woman was performing oral sex on the man, and it turned out to be a woman. And then someone else was whipping the middle woman, and so the pain was transferred from the whip to the middle woman, and then the spasm of pain, as the person jerked in reaction to the whip, the woman who looked like a man received oral pleasure.
So the middle woman was serving as a machine to translate pain into sexual pleasure.
Yes.
Exactly. And it was fabulous. It was fabulous on two levels, not only because of that kind of structure you just described, but the fact that the person I could swear was sort of a, handsome, if somewhat boyish-looking man, turned out to be all female. And I don't know why that's appropriate just now, but I thought maybe we could set something like that up here in the studio during the show tonight.
Do we have any oversized fly swatters or some other implement of?
Well, some of these audio cords could be put to good use.
Indeed, indeed. So do you think the drag king phenomenon plays into that sort of butch ideal?
Oh, certainly.
Is that what's going on there?
Oh, certainly. And, you know, there has been sort of a resurgence in the last decade, a reassessment of butch femme role-playing in lesbian relationships and in the culture. And some people have reclaimed this from its sort of working class degraded roots and sort of said, you know, made it something to be proud of and that it's a good way of modeling relationships.
So what do you mean by working class degraded roots?
Well, that the butch femme, at least in America, but the history of butch femme is very tightly connected to lesbian working class bar culture around the time of World War II and there, right thereafter, you know, in the 50s, early 60s, you know, pre-Stonewall.
Really?
The butch femme thing really comes out of working, you know, mostly working class lesbian bar culture.
So, but you say World War II. Is that connected at all to the sort of perceived absence of men during the war?
I don't know. Hmm. All I know is that, you know, in certain urban areas after the war, there started being more sort of gay bars and places for women to go to be together.
Okay.
And a lot of women that, like, hung out in bars that happened to be lesbians, a lot of them were working class and, you know. And so, and that's where the butch femme thing sort of developed.
But so other classes of lesbians, the implication of that statement is almost that other classes of lesbians have wanted to leave that distinction behind.
I think in the 70s, during the feminist movement and stuff, that you saw a lot of people feeling that the butch femme thing really, you know, catered to people's negative stereotypes of lesbians, that, oh, they're just trying to be fake men and all this other sort of thing, when there's really a lot of other things going on there. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily about trying to imitate a man.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm sort of curious about how someone, let's say I'm, you know, becoming a lesbian, I'm a young woman, and my sexual feelings are starting to, I'm starting to identify with my lesbianism. You know, it's fine as an academic to analyze trends and to analyze why people might take on certain roles, but certainly most kind of young, new lesbians aren't all that political, and they're just—it's just all about how they feel inside. So why would people polarize toward these kind of roles? Why can't they just be, you know, sort of who they were before they?
Well, I don't think people always gravitate toward those roles. I think some people, you know, I think there's a spectrum between, you know, masculinity and femininity in all men and women, and that some girls tend to be a little bit more butch and tomboyish, and some girls may tend to be more what's termed femme, and sometimes those two find themselves attracted to one another. Not always. I mean, there is, you know, sometimes butches are attracted to each other and sometimes femmes are. But I do think that there is a spectrum of being more masculine or more feminine, and in men as well. It's not just a binary culture.
Well, I mean, clearly no social trend is absolute, right? But sometimes there are generalizations to be made, as you just have.
So, since you are a sexuality expert in the studio dynamic here, would you say that James, aka Lance, is the more feminine of the two of us, and I am the masculine role?
He has more facial hair, so that just makes him more butch by default.
Oh, interesting. So indeed, I have the feminine role here. Interesting.
And don't forget it. So, being a professor in the art department here must be a pretty comfortable place to be a lesbian, right? Right.
Yeah, it seems fine.
So in the art world in general, I would think, right?
Mostly. I mean, in some places it's not so great, but it's mostly okay.
So why? What places is it?
Some people are just uptight. Just because they're into art doesn't mean they're not conservative.
I get the impression that dominant culture is very, I mean, almost sort of promotes the sort of diversity.
You mean in the arts?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, mostly. But, I mean, but you always run into homophobes everywhere.
Has it always been this easy? Was it easy coming out to your family?
Well, I didn't really always deal with it. The way my dad I mean, I just sort of went about my business, and nobody asked what I was doing, so that was pretty easy.
Do you think they suspected?
I don't think they really thought about it, but my dad did find out sort of by accident, and it's a pretty amusing story. I was in a bar in San Diego, California, which is where I grew up, with my very first real girlfriend, and we were dancing, and then I think we were making out.
How old were you at the time?
I had just turned 21.
Okay.
And we were making out, and it was one of these sort of tacky gay bars from, like, the early 80s where there was a neon devil on the dance floor, and the bar was called Diablos. And my girlfriend and I were making out, and my back was to the room, and all of a sudden someone came up behind me and tapped me on the shoulder, and I didn't see who it was, and I turned around, and it was my dad.
Wow.
And my dad said to me, "Susie, what are you doing here?" And I said, "Better question, Pop. This is a lesbian bar. What are you doing here? It's obvious what I'm doing. I'm making out with my girlfriend." And he said, "Oh, I'm here with my two bisexual girlfriends."
Well, I mean, to me, it sounds like he took the news rather well.
Well, and then he said something that some people get all bent out of shape about, but I think is kind of funny. He said, "If I wasn't your father, I'd show you what a good blank was." You know, somehow just, you know, the right magic wand would set all straight, so to speak, literally.
What was the vocabulary word he used? A blank?
A blank.
I used the blank for, blank. You know, that word I'm not allowed to say on the radio.
Oh, okay.
You guys told me I couldn't say certain words.
Well, you can say, okay.
That's the one that starts with F.
Sexual intercourse. Penis.
No, it's not penis.
It wasn't the object. It was the action.
The action.
Well, I should say that on the show, there's a long tradition of women trying to turn DJ Flu-like symptoms straight and failing pathetically.
I clinged to my sexual orientation for the sake of my people. I really consider my sexual orientation to be an important political statement.
But, I mean, do your own needs have to come before – I mean, do those have to be subverted to political causes?
Well, sometimes the good of the many outweighs the good of the few.
But isn't sexual diversity a good thing even in a person?
Yeah, shouldn't you be swinging both ways like some sort of door in those old Western saloons?
I feel like everyone has their own struggle to fight, and I feel like my struggle is devoted to 19-year-old swimmers and helping them come to terms with their own hidden sexuality. And other people might be focused on other things.
Wow.
Why swimmers and not soccer players or
welders?
Baseball players. Baseball players have nice thighs.
Well, some of them do. Some of them look like fat, unemployed postal workers, right? I mean,
well, yeah, some of them, especially pitchers.
Yeah. The ones that don't have to move very much. Although Mark McGuire does look sort of like a superhero, right?
I'm just noticing that I don't think either of you is really qualified to evaluate what men are the most attractive. Especially given your examples, welders and baseball players. I don't think you're getting it.
Well, you know, I mean, I like to think on the show that not everything I say has to be meant with, you know, firm sincerity. That occasionally a little sarcasm can creep in around the edges.
But I would think that firmness is important.
So indeed, the question is before you, DJ Flu-like symptoms, why swimmers? Is it because they're sleek and lithe?
Well, yeah. So not only are they, do they work out 4 hours a day doing swimming, and so it makes their bodies these firm, hard, compact piles of firm muscle, but they're also very devoted to their craft, and so they're sort of freakish and vulnerable. they spend all their time swimming. They don't know anything about the world, and so they're just waiting for some.
Do you actually know that they're vulnerable, or is that just a hypothesis that has yet to be proven?
Partially hypothetical, but.
And plus, they're usually pretty hairless because they shave their bodies.
Yes, an excellent point indeed. And so, you know, I've actually at the gym, I've actually offered to help them shave the more harder to reach nooks and crannies, but haven't been taken up.
What
on
possible excuse
which,
could they
which,
use?
Which nook and crannies were you specifically thinking of?
Oh, you know, I'm not picky.
Any nook will do in a pinch.
I used to have a roommate that was fastidious about shaving his balls. He was gay.
Well, actually, I in fact do that myself. I think it's actually and the gay men and Europeans do that because I think it's more attractive. Not only does it enhance the appearance of your package, making it I use package as a euphemism here, making it look larger. But also, it just looks nicer. I mean, there's nothing more skanky. Let's face it, straight men. I mean, your girlfriends will appreciate this. Than like a big unruly bush. I mean, come on, a little bit of trimming.
That's a two-way street, though.
Goes a long way.
No, DJ Lance, so what's your take on that?
Well, I just the thought of a razor down there makes me clench my legs together and imagine the pain.
Well, actually, I have a clippers from Kmart.
The special NAD clippers.
And so I usually don't shave it with a straight razor because it actually can get a little bit itchy. I clip it close with the kind of electric clippers, and it's quick, it's convenient.
What about the recent advances in waxing technology?
I haven't really gone there, although as every man knows or should know, your scrotum is pretty sensitive. And so if you put, for example, alcohol or nail polish remover or anything like that, that's sort of, or, yeah, you know, aftershave.
You just dissolve it, right?
Well, it's actually surprisingly painful. It's probably the worst pain you'll ever feel. I know that's not the question you asked. I don't know why I brought that up. But I remember doing that once, and
for fun, or was there some ostensible goal that you wanted to reach?
How'd you get nail polish there?
Well, the story is actually kind of embarrassing. I think I was younger, and when I was younger, I used to, like, masturbate with just about every household item that I came across, and the household item of the day was, this is going to sound really retarded, and I don't mean to use that word in an un-PC way, but I think I actually was mentally deficient on that day, because I was chewing, like, a big wad of chewing gum while masturbating, and then I got so aroused that I decided to wrap the chewing gum all over my my penis and my testicles, and it got all, like, caught in my, like, hairs and everything. Yeah, it just was not going away.
And we know how hard it is to get gum out of the hair on someone's head.
Right. And so I recalled incorrectly, I think, the idea that, like, you know, rubbing alcohol would
take
somehow,
it right out.
Would somehow, you know, turn the chewing gum into something stiff that could be removed easily. And then, so I poured it all over my scrotum, and I have not felt such pain. I felt I, like, actually screamed and jumped into the bathtub, and it hurt even more once the hot water hit my already.
But was it a beautiful pain that triggered a massive endorphin release later that day?
Endorphin?
Yeah.
Well, at the time I had not discovered the joys of sadism and masochism, and so it was just straightforward pain,
so this is before you learned to make pain your friend.
That's exactly right, and thank goodness my mom wasn't home, otherwise there'd be some explaining to do.
So back to this idea of shaving, right? Where does this issue lie in the lesbian community? Right, because porn stars and straight porn all have these exotic wax jobs done. Female porn stars all have these exotic wax jobs done. I was wondering what the
most lesbians I know shave their legs and their armpits, but not all.
They don't go the extra mile that DJ Flulek Symptoms is willing to go.
They shave their legs. They don't shave.
They do shave.
They do shave.
They shave their legs and their armpits, but not.
Aren't we talking about their vagina here? Wasn't that the question? Do they shave their crotch?
I don't know anyone that does that.
Really?
I mean, trimming maybe, but, you know, trimming but not shaving it. Just.
So
doesn't look that attractive if you shave the whole thing.
Well, but like I said, most female porn stars in a straight porn.
Yeah, well, they do that for the movies because it's all about visibility. It's not about touching anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all about making the genitalia more visible for the camera.
I have seen sort of trimmed vaginas that have sort of a tasteful kind of just a little bit of hair to add a little color, but it's pretty short.
Yeah, that's okay.
Interesting.
But the shaving thing, it just looks like a plucked chicken there.
Well, all the vaginas that I saw at the highway playground on Friday evening were smooth as a baby's bottom.
Where's the highway playground?
The highway playground, I don't even know where it is.
It's about 40 miles southeast of Pittsburgh.
It's on exit 8 of the turnpike.
And what is the highway playground?
It's the sleaziest strip joint you'll ever walk into.
We had a little field trip to the house.
Yeah, we organized a sex talk field trip, which will be the subject of an entire show in 2 weeks, probably.
Excellent.
I'm not sure we can go there now. But so back to you. So I don't mean to put you on the spot, but you are CMU's premier lesbian psychic artist. And so
I'm not very psychic, but, I'll go along with it.
All the good psychics deny that they're psychic, though. They don't want to give their enemies the advantage of knowing them.
So I want you to incorporate me, DJ, who likes symptoms, into your art. Like, if I were to ask, if I gave you, you know, a videotape and all your little tools, your little artist tools, what would I be? I mean, so you did this Christ thing already, so that's kind of done. I mean, maybe I could be another figure in history, like, oh, I don't know.
Judas?
Who do you want to be? Oscar Wilde, Dorian Gray.
I don't want to be some sort of froofy, gay, historical homosexual. I want to be some, like...
How about General Patton?
Yeah, there you go.
I guess so. I mean,
Kaiser?
Nobody ugly either, right? So, you know, I need to
Cary
be like...
Grant.
Or like the statue of David. Like the David, not the statue, but like, you know, some sort of Greek.
Wouldn't you rather have David than be David?
I don't know. Can't he have his cake and eat it too, in some sense?
No, I'd rather be David, actually, because then everybody would be like, wow, you know.
The swim team would be into you? Is that what you're hoping?
Yeah, but you wouldn't know what desire was anymore because you'd just be the object of desire.
Really?
This is almost the grass is always greener point, right? So you're saying that once you become an object of desire, you lose something?
Well, if you're solely an object of desire, if you lose your ability to be a desiring subject.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that happens to very beautiful people?
Some very beautiful people, but not all.
Really?
But I have seen it happen to some.
Really? Who have you seen? I mean, anyone?
Nobody famous, but just people I knew growing up who were incredibly gorgeous and never learned really how to desire because they just...
It was too easy?
Well, so many people desired them, and that was so easy, and they became sort of shallow, blank people that... Mm. Weren't very interesting other than their physical appeal.
So you would think that as the host of a popular late-night sex talk show, the desire for DJ Flu-like symptoms would be nonstop and overflowing.
Yes.
But so far he's managed to keep his head on straight.
So do you really think that – I'm fascinated by your comment. Do you really think that this – I mean, in my mind, all this desiring is actually just a little bit pathetic. I mean, whereas you seem to cast it as kind of – the important part of the
human experience,
maturation process. You know, you seem
it's
to be
not an important part of the maturation process. It's an important part of existence.
True, but I agree with DJ Flu-like symptoms in that there are lots of women who I'm attracted to who edge away nervously whenever I approach them, right? And that, you know, that desire, I mean, that reinforces this desire in me, but it makes me feel sort of squalid and pathetic at the same time, right?
Well, maybe that's what they call a bad object choices then on your part. Mm.
Well, anyone who knows me knows that I'm not particularly picky.
Well, you might, I mean, but that it's not about being picky. It's just about maybe you're not going for women with the right, you know, sort of sexual vibe.
Mm. That's very possible.
And plus, you know, I haven't been at CMU very long, but, you know, it doesn't strike me as the sexiest place I've ever been. Sort of.
Well, I've been at CMU for a long time, and I have to agree with that assessment.
Like, I really feel like maybe one of the problems here is that maybe students don't have sex enough.
Well, I don't know. I mean, students in the computer science department, certainly that's true. Students in the School of Fine Arts?
Even there, I wonder sometimes. Hmm. I mean, I think, you know.
Well, as a professor, you might have the power to change this. Do you think you could? You could.
No.
Workshops on.
No. That's where I draw the line. You can't do those sorts of things.
Well, I mean, not even if that's where your art led you.
There are lines I won't cross.
Are there just for our viewers' edification? Are there any other lines you won't cross?
While you're doing whatever it is you're doing, remind our listeners, I'm just sorry to interrupt, but 621-9728, get out your little pencils and write this down, 621-9728. If you haven't called in because you don't know the number.
Yes. If you have questions about love, money, family, we're here and waiting to answer them for you.
What's going to happen in Y2K? will you be married in the next 5 years? Our psychic.
Yeah. We took a course on Y2K, so we're prepared to answer your questions.
So.
Give us some other lines that you won't cross.
Other lines I won't cross. There's not that many, but I do think that, you know, the whole student thing is.
Well, we're not asking you to have sex with students. We're asking you to get the students to have sex with each other.
Or with me.
Or me, right? We don't want to, like, exclude most of the population.
I don't know what the university policy is on that. And, you know, remember, I'm not tenured yet. And if I do desire such a thing, I've got to, you know, mind my P's and Q's a little bit.
True. So this, I'm still interested in this dichotomy between object desire and being desired. Has that found its way in your artwork at all?
Oh, certainly. The last piece I made is called The Look of Love, a Gothic Romance, and it's all about being a desiring subject and that fleeting desire that can never be satisfied, and how that's, to me, the, you know, sort of the sublime. It's really about my relationship to images of women in, like, Hollywood movies. Oh, we got a phone call, I think.
We do have a call. So hold that thought, and let's get the caller on the air.
Welcome, caller.
Hello.
Thanks so much for calling. Did you have a question or a comment to share with us?
A comment, to be precise. I'm European, and I just want to say that most Europeans I know do not shave their scrotums. And I just want to clarify that.
Wait, I'm sorry, caller. Who doesn't shave their scrotum?
Europeans.
Europeans.
Most Europeans I know, and I've been in many a locker room.
All over Europe?
All over Europe. This is extensive study.
What were you doing in all these?
I would like to know how.
How close did you get?
Or who said that Europeans shaved?
No, that was me, DJ. Yeah. Flu-like symptoms. I've seen many Europeans with shaved scrotum.
So what were you doing in all these locker rooms all over Europe?
Checking out guys.
It was some research experience. I mean, it's a sacrifice I made for humanity. I cannot recount the details on this show right now, but the summary is Europeans as a whole do not shave their scrotum.
Does that count for – I mean, what about European women?
I'm sure there are situations the same as this hypothetical highway playground place where there are shaved parts of the body, but in my experiences, it is rare.
Do you have experiences of the highway playgrounds of Europe?
They're called the Autobahn, at least in Germany.
I'm not too certain about this highway playground place, so I'm not certain. I'm sure that people in Europe treat themselves with taste and discretion.
So I can't help but think that, judging from your accent, that you're from Ireland. Are you a victim of the so-called Irish curse, which is that you have an unusually small penis?
Well, I guess I'd have to come over there and do a size comparison.
Well, we have 17 minutes.
I don't think I can get there in that time. I don't want to
ruin. Could you send us a photo next to a ruler?
I don't want to ruin the vibe that's happening in the show. It's going beautifully. I just wanted to maintain the clarity and the truth that I expect from WRCT by.
So you're speaking with the voice of Europe, the voice of a unified European economic community.
I speak for the EEC as a whole.
Okay.
Okay, let's put that on record.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Carla, for that illuminating, enlightening comment. I'm afraid I still have to stand by my comment that the sexiest Euro guys that I see in the shower are all shaved because they know what's up.
Oh, you have
what
lied
country
to
was
then.
This in?
You have lied to me.
Wait, how has he lied to you? I mean, on this show, DJ Flu-like Simpsons has been nothing but truthful, except when a tasty bit of sarcasm could make the whole world laugh.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know what surprises me is that the European Union has such an ambassador for scrotal shaving issues. They say the Brussels bureaucracy has run out of control.
200, something like that.
Is it about Brussels sprouts?
I'm sorry, caller. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Please continue.
No. I think you guys should continue with the show as is. I mean, cause I don't want to distract you from your motif for the night. I just wanted to make sure that you're telling the truth at all times.
You wanted to set the record straight.
Okay, a separate voice, a counterbalance to the insane ramblings of DJ.
Exactly.
Like symptoms has been noted.
So one question though before you go, caller. As a representative of the EEC and particularly of Ireland, have you ever had gay homosexual feelings that you've suppressed?
That is obviously a subject for another show.
Well, leave your phone number with our producer, and we'll We'll be happy to arrange it.
Okay. Goodbye.
So I don't, I mean, I actually feel like that my question hasn't really been answered. Scrotal shaving or not. Actually, the other nice thing about scrotal shaving is that it's sensuous. I mean, you feel that no part of the man's body is suppler and smoother than his scrotum. And when it's shaved, it feels, what do you mean? Why are you looking at me like that?
I don't think of scrotum are particularly smooth.
Well, the skin
can be sort of
that's
soft
true.
And
it's
smooth.
True.
I mean, it's wrinkly, but it feels soft.
It is soft.
Well, so how is that smooth? I mean, wrinkly is usually not associated with being smooth.
Smooth, so you're soft, supple.
Okay, that I could buy.
Sensuous.
Like fine cowhide gloves?
Even better.
Even better.
And so when
more
it's
delicate.
When it's shaved, it's profoundly sensual, and you just want to spend all day like rubbing your scrotum against stuff.
And you're usually wearing underwear, so right, you've got your ready-made stuff right there, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like the question that I had for Professor Psychic is, how would you incorporate me? I feel you haven't answered this question. How would you incorporate me into your next breakthrough artistic piece?
Well, that would be, I'm not quite sure how I would incorporate you into my next psychic art piece. It depends on if you're a top or a bottom.
Bottom, big time. This has been established in multiple
Yeah, long time listeners will know that.
Right? Oh, see, well, I'm new to Pittsburgh, so I didn't know that.
The billboards just haven't, we haven't, I guess our check hasn't cleared yet.
Well, then I think, you know, we could get you in a French maid's outfit with a peekaboo bodice and bare behind.
I've got bruises to prove, by the way. Definitely a big time bottom, and I'm not even kidding.
I just wanted to add, as the only heterosexual female representative, that a shaved scrotum for women can be absolutely fabulous too, like on the receiving end. Because
really, does it like bonk against your female parts, or what's the
makes it feel better? It's not so scratchy and icky.
Right, not so like, and it's cleaner.
It smells nicer.
Yes, it's much more, you know, easier to work with, kind of thing. Even if you're you know, having oral sex, it's much more pleasant. So.
A million times more pleasant.
Well, maybe that's what I've been doing wrong.
Well, so, I mean, it is possible. You don't want stubbly scrotum, right? I mean, that must be really annoying if you have, like, razor burn.
A little, yeah.
But I can imagine. And I actually have to say, as a longtime aficionado of the locker room, guys, if you're a little bit on the small side, I've seen many people who, like, are sort of under proportioned and yet have massive amounts of pubic hair so that their penis and like scrotal area is almost invisible. I mean, that's just tragic,
oh, that's
right? Yeah. So you got to shave.
It's not mysterious and exotic.
This is not.
Yeah, it's like, ooh, what is it?
It's like trying to hide the possum, right? I mean, you want to actually. I mean, you want to accentuate what you have. I mean, you know.
Well, where are the hairstylists of the pubic area? Like, I guess the argument you're making here is that just the way that our hair, the hair on top of our heads, serves as a frame for our face, and it's styled accordingly to accent what's good about us and to pull attention away from what's bad at us. So, too, an analogous technology could be developed for the pubic area.
And even just the well-manicured pubic area. I mean, they should
make clean,
like
well-manicured
hair, really. Because it could just be trimmed regularly.
I mean, so many straight men think, if I trim my pubic hair, that'll make me gay. That's not really true. I mean,
well, so what if it does?
But you don't understand what it's like being a straight man, knowing that half of the things you could possibly do, oiling your body, going to a gay bar, will make you gay instantly, right? You don't know what it's like to live with that fear.
So
are we scrotally satisfied now, or have we?
Are we exhausted?
I shaved my butt. Just so you know, it's all shaved down there.
Which part?
Well, actually, it's a little bit confusing because my so-called partner likes a little hair. I actually prefer a smoother presentation, but my partner likes a little hair. So there's a certain tension there. But I'm actually talking about getting the clippers right down to the reaction where the action is. You know, the actual. butthole, if I may use a technical term, and that whole kind of clearing all the fuzz that you might encounter down there.
Huh? Wow.
So, back to the art.
I don't know if women have hair on their butt.
What?
I don't know if women have hairy butts. Probably not, right?
Not as often.
Mm.
And they're much more self-conscious about it and tend to intervene, you know, a lot more diligently than men do. At least in my experience. I don't want to get another call saying, well, in Europe,
I don't know, I think that
men do have hairy scrotums.
I think the Irish person was some kind of faker. I don't know. I don't know what that was all about.
What are you saying? That didn't sound like a real Irish accent.
No, I think that was total poser.
Who knows? Who cares?
Indeed. So back to the important part of the show, which is immortalizing DJ Flu-like symptoms in a piece of your artwork.
So I was wearing a French-made outfit.
Yeah, I like that. And we'll bend you over a chair or table.
It's working so far, yes.
And then we can get some big strapping butch gal to, you know, strap one on, so to speak.
Interesting. Wow, well, that is... that's.
And that won't be art. That might be some kind of, you know, like porn project.
Right. It's oddly...
Where's the line, though?
It's oddly reminiscent of my own boarding school experiences, but it could work. I mean, couldn't it be a swim team member? Couldn't you just sort of...
Could it be a female swim team member?
Well, how about a male swim team member pretending to be a female with a strap on?
Well, I think we could incorporate the swim team as you would be on a dais in the middle of a swimming pool, and we would have nude, male, beautiful swimmers doing Esther Williams routines around you while you...
masturbated.
No, while you were...
violated by the woman with the strap on.
Right.
Now, that's excellent. Do you have a budget? Could you get a grant for this? Or how do we make
well,
this
you know,
reality?
We could try. It sounds great. Could we do it in the CMU pool?
Oh, I think so.
I don't see why not.
How do we get this green lighted?
Well, I mean, our guest is the artist. She's the one who knows how to put all these things together, right? Like, you basically just have to provide the ass.
I think that actually sounds like a beautiful image.
So, I was thinking Summers is more some sort of Greek chorus commenting on... commenting on the action.
Well, there would be a Greek chorus of Esther Williams swimmers.
Okay, if you're calling in, whether from Europe or not, the phone number is country code 1, area code 412-621-9728. You only have 7 minutes to call, so hurry up.
Okay, there's so many things that are left that we haven't talked about. I'd still like to get back to your father and his two bisexual girlfriends.
Was he in drag, your father?
Oh, no. My father's never done drag. And my father, as far as I know, has never, like, done it with a guy. At least not that he'd admit it to. He's really into women. And he's had more sex than just about anyone I've ever known, straight or gay. And he really likes to talk about it. And he's going to be 70 next month. And sometimes...
is he still going strong?
Well, you know, he's in love with Viagra. Hmm. You know, before that, he was using some sort of, like, injection thing because he has high blood pressure. And so he was telling me, so he was, you know, he gave himself a little stroke by ODing on his, like, erection shot. And he said it was worth it, though.
So what is it about your father that allows him to be such a sexual being? I mean, right? Like, how does he attract?
I mean, he's not, you know, he's a small guy physically. He's only like 5'7". Yeah. But, you know, when he was young, he had a nice body, and he's just super charming, and he really does love women and love women's bodies, I think, from what, like, he was going out with girls that were in my high school when I was in high school. My parents were split up by then. And I would go, God, how could you go out with my dad? He's so old. That's so gross. And the girls in my high school would tell me he was good in bed. And
wait, but that implies that there was something else that got them to the point of finding out, right? Because women don't just jump into bed with men to find out how good they are.
My dad always makes women feel good about themselves. He always tells them how nice they look, how...
Wow. Has he written some sort of book or pamphlet that I can purchase?
I don't know, but he can, you know... Like when I was a little kid, he did all the married women up and down our street.
He sounds more like a force of nature than a father.
Yeah, we definitely need to meet this man and take his seminars. This is incredible.
You know, so yeah.
Have you inherited a lot of his seductive power? I mean, I'm sensing a certain kind of seductive vibe right now. I'm not really sure if it's directed at me or at co-host Ranch.
Well, you never know. Maybe it's both.
True. I mean, and we must feel only tiny aftershocks of what an attractive woman would be feeling, right?
Interesting. Producer Kate, are you feeling anything? Oh, producer Kate is not at her mic, but she's powerfully aroused. We can tell by.
Yeah, right.
So have you? So I mean, there are right. You know, there's an old saying like father like son, right? There's no reason why it shouldn't apply. Like father. Like
oh,
brother.
I'm certainly more like my father than my brother is. My brother's more like our mother.
Hmm. And sexually speaking, what does that mean?
She's more reserved.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So that would imply that you're not reserved at all.
Not very much. Hmm.
So your parents
I get shy and I blush, but I'm not very reserved.
Mm-hmm. Your parents had an open relationship then? Or
no, they split up when I was 12.
Oh, okay.
So that's what happened.
Interesting.
My mom finally got tired of him doing everybody else.
So have you inherited that behavior at all? Right? I mean, because you've lived in cities bigger than Pittsburgh where there would be more action, so to speak.
Sure.
I mean, there's again this sort of folk belief that, right, lesbians meet and they settle down right away, right?
Oh, that's happened. Yeah, there's that joke that, you know, what does a lesbian bring to the second date, right?
A U-Haul,
uh-huh. Right. Okay. Yeah, moving truck. Very good. I mean, that's the joke, you know.
Okay.
And I've had that experience before, but I've also had other types of...
You bring the U-Haul, or...?
Well, somebody bring in the U-Haul.
Okay. Well, so as a lesbian psychic yourself, then do you... are you the kind of person who brings the U-Haul, or would you prefer more of the kind of kinky sex with no strings? Kind
the
of?
Rider trucks, so to speak.
I prefer the latter, actually, but, you know, it's sometimes not very practical.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know it was practical for your dad, right?
Well, he suffered from it, you know. He never really recovered from my mother leaving him. Mm. You know, he complained about it for the rest of his life.
In between having sex with...
Yeah, exactly.
Your high school classmates.
Right.
Yeah, but that, every one of those sexual acts was him crying out for help.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, you know, he just, you know, he paid a price. His life was never the same, you know. Yeah, in certain ways. And so there is always that. I mean, we don't really have time to get into that, but there is always that thing, you know, there's that dichotomy between what we would call lust and comfort, right?
And he was way over on the lust side, right?
Yeah, and I'm pretty much on the lust side, but, you know, that doesn't mean sometimes I don't miss comfort.
True, but has that played itself out? I mean, have you led a pretty sort of active swinging lifestyle at times?
Sure. Yeah. But it doesn't mean I don't still want to. Mm. It just means that sometimes I don't quite as much.
You don't what quite as much?
Live the wild lifestyle as much as I used to.
Okay. How do you think the prospects for the wildlife star are here in Pittsburgh?
Oh, so far I feel like it's pretty grim. You know, I haven't been out that much, but nobody has told me, or wherever people have told me that, you know, women hang out, women who like women hang out, any of the places I've gone like that have been a little bit grim. So,
really?
You know, but.
Well, I can say having stepped out on the town with DJ Flu-like symptoms a few times. It's hard for him to get from the front door of the bar to the bathroom without significant attention being paid to him.
Oh, please.
Even before the people realize that he's a sex talk show host.
The problem is that DJ Lance has sexual desires for me, and he sublimates them by pretending that other people have sexual desires for me. In fact, you know, I go to the bars and get virtually ignored by everyone except for people who are asking for money. And so...
But, I mean, it's for the March of Dimes, though. It's usually good cause.
And so I'm with you, sister, if I may call you sister.
Sister, brother.
So have you tried rugby? I understand that there's a substantial women's rugby...
rugby connection, right?
Going on in Pittsburgh. I mean...
I think that wouldn't really be my thing.
Speed. Well, what if it was rugby, but each person on the team were a different... one of Christ's apostles.
Oh, even more of a reason to avoid it.
Wait, wouldn't they be men then?
Well, yeah. The women dressed up as men.
Right. For men dressed
the apostles
up as
didn't really give us a lot of visual cues to differentiate them, right? That's largely an artist's interpretation.
Well, I think that that's actually the opportunity, the artistic opportunity that you
right.
have.
There you go.
I dated a woman for a while who was on the rugby team, and she was one of only four straight women on the rugby team.
I believe that.
And they put them all in one room. All the straight women in one room on the field trips.
Because maybe they thought if they put them all together, they might turn into lesbians.
Well, no, you would think they would want to. They would want, right? My ex-girlfriend told me they would just sort of look at us like, you know, like missionaries looking at poor unconverted tribesmen, as if there was something that they knew about that they couldn't wait to tell us, but we couldn't quite understand. Right?
That's pretty funny. That flu shot really did something to you. My guess is you're not normally so languid.
It is. The flu shot is definitely working for me on multiple levels. Plus the idea of being in your next project is really exciting to me. Because we talked about this on the show before. We've been trying desperately to break into the art community. I mean, mm-hmm. ironically, even though that CFA is only 300 yards away from our own vortex of research, Ween Hall, we never interact with any CFA people at all. But you are the linchpin. You are the
Yellow Brick Road
that will tie us into the lifeline of hot CFA babes. So this isn't about you and your so-called work. This is about you and your connections to the hot undergrads.
Shh. DJ Fluex Symptoms, you're revealing our hidden agenda too soon.
So I have two final questions for you. Susie, the psychic artist. The first is, what do you think? I'm going to ask you to predict the future just a little bit here. What do you think is the next level in the next frontier in human sexual art forms? Like, what area has not been explored in artistic expression of human sexuality?
Wow, that's a hard one. I think that almost everything has been explored in one way or another. I mean, you know, and ever since really the 50s and 60s, especially the 60s, was a watershed of sexual art practices. We had Vito Acconci doing Seedbed, whereby he laid under a platform in a gallery and masturbated while people looked around the gallery and would, like, say sort of obscene things to the visitors.
Wow.
And they couldn't see him, but they could hear him crawling around in this little crawl space. So, I mean...
How does anybody know he was actually masturbating then?
They didn't.
Okay.
But he said he was. But, I mean, so people have done all sorts of things. And then I saw a performance where with a female-to-male transsexual, hermaphrodite, where they had both girl and boy parts, and they stripped and demonstrated their parts for you.
Interesting.
So you're saying, I mean, what is there left to do then? I mean, you're an artist. You wouldn't be an artist if you didn't feel there was something left to say, right?
I think there's still a lot to be said about desire, and that people haven't really finished that topic, especially the idea of women as desiring subjects. Most things are about men as being desiring subjects.
True enough. So you're saying sex, the clinical, biological plumbing side of sex, has been pretty well plumbed. But it's really sort of the more human aspect of it, the more sort of psychological aspect that still...
I think so, even though the surrealists were really into that, but they were mostly guys.
Well, true, and the language in which they attempted to speak is difficult for anyone to interpret.
So DJ Psychic Susie, in the last few seconds... So if virtual reality technology allowed you to adopt multiple sexual appliances, for example, multiple vaginas, multiple penises, multiple even unheard-of sexual appendages that allowed you various kinds of orgasmic feelings...
Could she have a scrotum that was shaved and not shaved at the same time?
Yes or no?
That's up to you.
Well, so... With that tempting and challenging comment, I'm going to have to close the show for the evening. DJ Susie Psychic, Sexpert Lesbian 2000, thank you so much for joining the show. You've been powerfully arousing and stimulating. This is WRCT Pittsburgh. Please tune in again every week, Tuesday at 11 o'clock, for yet to be challenged and excited by all of our breakthrough technologies that we present to you. Thank you for listening. Good night.